This is Pop Fiction Women. I'm Corinne.
I'm Kate, and we're complicated.
Blunt.
Total boss.
But sometimes a mess.
Opinionated.
But never boring.
And in this podcast, we're discussing the complicated women of the best books, TV, and movies.
Along with the complicated women behind the scenes. Warning, lots of spoilers ahead.
So come back when you're done.
Hurry up, it's starting. Oh boy, I'm all jittery and excited to talk about The Queen's Gambit episodes 5, 6, and 7. But I wanted to say generally, I thought these were really fun episodes.
Yeah.
This is how you do the middle of a show. Great songs. They have, you know, she's playing them loud. Fever. The Monkees. Mm-hmm. I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. Loved all of it. And so many great effects, like the faces on the chessboard, the squares kind of coming in and out of people's faces on the screen. I mean, it was just, I don't know anything about TV making, so I don't know who is responsible for those things, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
But then also, we have to talk about the fashion.
I read about the fashion that it's all chess inspired. You notice how much black and white
I
she wears?
I did notice that.
Yeah.
Only in Russia. I didn't notice it otherwise, but I did.
Well, I had read it a while ago. So then if you had had it in your head, you probably would have noticed it more. And it's just by the end, she just looks amazing. I mean, putting aside the chess inspiration for it, that final, I mean, when we get to her final outfit is just exquisite. I mean, it's just perfect.
All the makeup, the hair gets better. I mean, the whole thing is just watching her evolution, it kind of coming into her own. I loved it. So stellar. The show is top notch on every level. Really is.
Yeah. Again, to your point about how you do the middle episodes. I mean, then I was so excited to be seeing some of these these old foes back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have Harry for the first half of this episode, and then you get Benny for the second half.
This is how I operate. I kind of loved seeing it. I have never heeded the idea of like keeping things separate. Her friends, her work colleagues, and her boyfriends are all the same pool of people, right? These are all chess people. And I always operated that. I need people who are exceptional in / and or passionate about the same things as I am. I don't understand who, like someone who's like, oh, I'm an interior decorator and he's a, you know, computer programmer. I'm like, well, what goes on there? Like, what goes on? How do you collide? I don't understand.
Right. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, clearly Beth agrees with you.
Yes.
Or she just, given her lifestyle, is just certainly not, doesn't exactly have the time or I don't think the disposition to go out and we saw what happened when she tried to hang out with the apple pies.
And maybe that is more of it. I have the same lifestyle and disposition that she does there. I think that might be it.
Yeah.
We just like to be consumed with what we want to be consumed with, and adding to it just feels like a distraction. So okay, so we start with Harry Beltic, who swoops in really as Beth.
Well, first I'll just say with the flashbacks, because I do think each of these flashbacks kind of matters to sort of her, the ending. But this one is one of her mom telling her that it's important not to be scared of being alone. Mm-hmm. And that's come up a number of times, I think, in these flashbacks. But I think it will come full circle towards the end. But anyways.
It's funny, because I didn't mark any of them down until the last one. I do think that's bad advice. I do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think her mother's been giving her bad advice all along.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
so that's why they're noteworthy.
I think I think by the end, she stops listening to her mother's voice in her head.
Got it.
And makes her own choices about how she wants to live her life. So,
okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's bad advice.
Okay.
Definitely. Then we got Harry.
Yes.
And his teeth are fixed.
Yes. And he swoops in just as Beth really needs someone. Alma has passed. And she is going back to this house all alone. And so it's really nice that he comes out of the blue and calls her. But they are very, as far as chess goes, ideologically opposed. She doesn't want to learn theory. She doesn't want to talk about possibilities. She says she likes to analyze what actually happened, not what could happen. This to me was very, we already know she's a Scorpio, and I don't know how much of this was conscious, but it tracks with a fixed sign so much. The fixed sign would only want to. And I only notice it because I'm the opposite. And fixed sign wants to analyze what has already happened. And the cardinal sign is already looking to what's going to happen next, or hypothesizing or playing it out, and not based on what has happened in the past. So,
right.
So I thought that
and
was
the fixed sign in me.
Yeah.
I'm fixed.
Yes.
I get it. I get her on that.
And he says, you're so stubborn, you get mad. And when that happens, you only see what's in front of you. And she says, she tries to argue with him. She says, anger clears my head. He says, anger is a potent spice. A pinch wakes you up. Too much dulls your senses. You've got to stay open.
And I just love how he's pushing her, you know. I mean, she's arrogant at times, you know, and set in her ways. And he's like, listen, you're a great player, but you need to improve a lot to beat Borghoff. And that's what you want to do. Then, you know, you got to think about it from a different way. Control your anger. Like, he really does push her.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
it's not going to get her all the way.
No,
but
it does take gives her a baby step in the right direction. But he doesn't really challenge her. I mean, I get what you're saying. I agree. But it's not going to be enough to take her anywhere. And it's not on an intimate level or a professional level. There's no fire or chemistry. It's nice. It's better than being alone.
But even the part, though, when he comes out, though, after he finds the tranquilizers in the bathroom, and not the part when he leaves and confronts her. This is even before that. Just when he leaves the bathroom and she's dancing to Fever, as you mentioned.
Yes.
So I love that.
I love it.
But the look on his face, I mean, he's almost looks scared of her, like uncomfortable. And at first I thought, is he just uncomfortable because he's just like not used to being around women, which is, I'm assuming,
right?
Or maybe because he's got a crush on her or whatever, and he's not really seen a woman acting sexy and dancing. But then, I'm like, I think, and we can talk about it more later, but I think he's a little scared of her. He's because I do think he sees her, and I mean it in the way we like to say sees, but not in like the way Connell sees Marianne and normal people type sees, but like is starting in that moment, and it comes out more later, but to see the turmoil inside her, and it will come out more, but that was the first glimpse of it for me, and he looks uncomfortable.
He did look uncomfortable. I did think it was a little bit of like shell shock. Oh my God, here's this gorgeous girl who's also so smart, and she's dancing, and I'm so awkward. I don't know what to do. But in the end, he thanks her for helping him see he just doesn't love chess the way she does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it is. I think she's so moved and so consumed by and into it that he's like, I just don't feel that way. And so
he definitely comes to that realization. I think that,
but that is part of him seeing her. He's like, look at her. She is carried away by this. And I just don't feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he does say that. But then that, he hands her that book at the end, and they're talking about that famous chess player that lost his mind and retired at 22. And Morphy, I guess, was his name. And he said that he fell into a muttering paranoia and died. And he tells her, like, you know, he would stay up in cafes drinking all night, and then he would play the next day and just like destroy people. And he said they called that guy the pride and the sorrow of chess. Then he retired at 22. And Beth says, you think that's going to be me? And he says, I think that is you. I think maybe it's always been you. And then he takes the green pills, you know, and puts them down and just says, be careful, Beth. And, you know, that's kind of what I was saying before. I feel like he does see her and sees the torment inside her, sees the demons, and is sort of calling her on it. But, you know, he cares about her, but he's like, I don't know what to do, but be careful,
Right. Interesting. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think we're not so far apart. I think we're probably saying the exact same thing, but just looking at it very differently. And he does the right thing, I thought, and the hard thing by leaving her, because he deserves a better match too, right? It's not that she's just so pretty or phenomenal that he should be glad to be with her. He deserves someone who's a better match for him. And I was really impressed with him in that moment when he left. For as many times as I kind of look at him and I think, ugh, you're such a wimp, he steps up and says, I'm just going to leave. This isn't right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was the fear, particularly probably on your part, that he was just going to be like the nice guy, like the moody, the one that's just like there to help her. Right. And, you know, but he isn't. No. You're right. He stands up for himself.
Yes. He can't help her anymore, but he can help himself. And that means getting out.
And not just be a hangers on.
Yeah. Well, do you have any more, Harry? Because otherwise I'm ready to get to Benny.
We're going to Benny. We're going to the U.S. Championship. Yeah.
If things with Harry were, I was thinking of Goldilocks. Things with Harry were too cold. Things with Benny are too hot. It's too much. Still not the right fit, but the total opposite end of the spectrum. They're pushing their buttons so intense and so electric. Mm-hmm. You know it's not sustainable.
No, the back and forth with them.
Yeah, and they're at the championships and he's crushing her at speed chess in the cafeteria. And all he has to do is say, no, it's not even him. He's like, again? And she's like, I know. She's in. She
just throws her money down. Yeah, bam, bam, bam.
She can't stop. She doesn't know when to stop. And then we'll later contrast that with when she's kicking the shit out of him and she keeps saying again. And anyone would keep going. Your ego is on the line. Your pride is on the line. Anyone would keep going. But he clearly knows when to stop. And he's like, no, this is done. Uh-uh. But she can't. Yeah. She cannot do it.
That was dizzying watching that. Mm-hmm. Then afterwards, when she goes back to her room, she almost seems like she's like not drunk, but just like she's coming off the high or the whatever that was, the energy.
For sure, that's the addict mind, where she is has to recalibrate herself and come down and figure out how to see straight again. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. That is the addict mind.
Yeah.
Then they meet in the final. And she beats him like a drum.
She does. We've said repeatedly one of her weaknesses is that she's always on the attack and she doesn't defend herself properly. And I think in this case, at this time, pulling black at being the one to go second was a real benefit for her.
And she beat him, though. I mean, we don't see that, which is interesting. They're sitting at the bar after, and he's, you know, sort of fuming about how badly or how quickly she beat him. Yes. I guess it was like 30 moves, and they're just drinking a beer. And she's sort of like, get over it, dude.
Yeah.
He's worried about her drinking.
Because he hasn't seen her, this side of her, until now. And he's like, do you always drink this much? And she says, sometimes I drink more.
I love that. Exactly. She's like, yeah. But yeah, so then he invites her, or suggests, right, that he be her trainer and invites her to New York.
Yes. Yeah, but you know where she thinks this is going. She doesn't care about training. She wants to get with him. And she's like, okay, super.
She's touching his hair. Mm-hmm. And your hair is pretty.
I like your hair.
I like your hair. And he's like, sex is off the table. And I'm like, okay, Mr. Hard to Get. We'll see about that.
Well, he does. Until she is ready and until she is the next level, it is. It's totally off the table.
And the drinking's off the table. Mm-hmm. I mean, he
pills, everything. So now we're getting into episode 6, New York City.
They get to Benny's scary basement apartment.
Yes.
It was very frightening to me.
To you too? Because she clearly was, but I was like,
I was horrified. But you know how I have the Libra rising. Aesthetics are very important to me. And that was like, I was instantly depressed. Okay.
All right. But Benny wants to teach her the fundamentals. Yes. And she really resists. He says, you're bored by ordinary chess, even when it's played by grandmasters. And that's true. She doesn't want it. And it was the same reaction she had as she was telling poor Alma, who was already gone at that point, how bureaucratic and unimaginative Borgov was the first time she played him. But Benny is going to turn that around for her, and he's going to play serious chess and teach her seriously. And he says the rules are no drinking, no pills, no sex, and you're going to learn what you're supposed to learn, what you should have already known.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she does it. Yeah. They work.
They do. And we get to see by the time she's done, a few people come over and she beats three men at the same time. She wins her money.
One of which is a grandmaster, yes, apparently.
She wins all of her money back. And again, is pushing Benny's buttons, knows when to stop. And he kicks everybody out. And then that's when they let it happen.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and also in that group, that's when she meets Cleo, who will come back to haunt her. But yes, Cleo, the model, the one who's French and was always jet setting. And, and Beth is enamored with her. And this won't be the first time we see Cleo. But I mean, the last time we see Cleo.
We can close out Cleo. I mean, I am all about free will. Beth made lots of bad choices, but Cleo just should have backed off. And she, I mean, it wasn't a joke. This isn't like a college midterm or something, you know. This is,
although I think the exact same way. Then I did think though that Cleo doesn't really know her very well. And the first time when she met her, the time we're talking about now in Benny's apartment, she wasn't drinking. She doesn't know what she's dealing with here, meaning that there is no such thing as one drink for Beth Harmon.
Right.
And maybe saying to someone, oh, come on, just have one drink. You know, for a lot of people that would not have cratered their entire night and ruined their match the next morning. She still should have backed off, but you know, I don't think she quite understood. But even still, once she starts drinking.
But she knew she was in Paris for a huge tournament. And it's the finals. Completely. So, I mean, I don't blame her for calling from the lobby and pushing her from the lobby. But when she says, I have the finals tomorrow, I really need to stay and rest. Yeah. And then even if she came down for one drink, how about just say.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Once she starts, be like, all right, yeah, you had your one. I don't want to ruin your next day or whatever.
Yeah. So again.
Once she sees her go off. Pounding them back. Yeah. It's bad though. Yes. I mean, they go on a complete bender.
Total bender. I mean, all night. It looks like practically all night.
They
go find the guys. Clearly. They end up in the room. I mean, just, it's not good.
So Cleo, unfortunately, we never should have met you.
This is the closest I had ever felt to what you talk about when someone else, like, who was the girl with Connell that came in, his girlfriend?
Helen.
Yes, what was her name? Yes. It was Helen.
Look at me. I'm like, Helen.
And I've never understood that. When you say that, I'm like, yeah, whatever. He's got to be happy too, blah, blah, blah. No, this is when I understood it. I was like, oh, Cleo.
She's getting in the way of our girl.
But back to Benny before, real quick. They have sex and she is like, oh, that's what this is all about. She finally gets it. But he kind of breaks her heart a little bit. She's into this. She has just had this amazing experience. She now kind of understands sex and it's a game changer for her. She's glowing. And then he's like, well, listen, you should still play the Sicilian against Borgov. And she's like, what?
See? But isn't this the problem of what you said earlier of your friends and lovers and colleagues all being obsessed with the same thing? This is an occupational hazard right there.
I agree.
Like,
I don't think she should have been upset about it. I would have been happy. That's me. I'm Benny. I'm Benny there.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. You're like, what's your problem? Yes. Yeah, we just said sex, but now I want to talk about chess again.
Absolutely.
I see. Okay, I see. Oh, then that's perfect. Yeah, she does not think that way, though. She looks annoyed. Yeah, she's like, I'm done with you.
Yes. But that's also where Beth admits that she loved and still loves Towns, which was surprising to me.
I was totally surprised by that. Yeah, I forgot. Thank you. That's the big part I wanted to take away from Cleo and her at the bar. Yeah, she asks her, like, you know, is there like a one that got away or one? And yeah, Beth's answer is Towns. And I'm like,
Which makes sense when you think back to that first match between them and the way they had like eyed each other from across the room and how young and impressionable she was at the time. You could see that would linger with her, stay with her.
Yes. Although, of course, I'm like, but you don't even know Town.
Right. I don't know that it would have held up, or even that she believed it would have, but just that maybe he was the one who, not the one who got away, the one who never really, like, what could have that been?
Yeah.
Okay, so she wakes up in the bathtub in Paris,
right.
And this is where we've now begun back at the beginning. We're seeing where she started.
Didn't you think when you first saw this in the first episode, I assumed that once we got back to this, that it would be the end.
I did.
I don't know about you.
I did.
Yeah. And so I was surprised. I'm like, oh, we're back in the bathtub.
And there's more than an hour, yeah, and a half to go. Yes.
Yeah. And now we knew who the person with dark hair in the bed was. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was Cleo. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, and then she's pulling herself out and racing down to play against Borgov. Oh, but there's so much more after this.
Oh, please. We're going to talk about this when we get to the next episode. But this show could have ended 12 times and it just kept going to my delight.
Yeah.
So in this match with Borgov, she is looking around the room very suspiciously. She's sweating. She's having so many flashbacks, and she pretty quickly resigns. It's embarrassing. The whole thing is very embarrassing.
And that scene, I thought, I felt it. Mm. I felt like you said, her constantly drinking the water, those shots of her hand, like reaching for the empty water glass, and she's sweaty, like you said, and pale. And I was like unraveling with her.
Oh, I was so pissed at her. They did an amazing job. It's just having experience with that. I just couldn't. I was just like, oh, you goddamn idiot.
Like you fucked it up. Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. And then that tear just rolls down her cheek.
Ugh.
When she resigns, I'm like, oh, fuck.
It's your own fault. I was pissed. Yeah. I really was pissed. Yeah. But so she's on her way back from Paris, and Benny wants her to come. He's pretty much begging her to come to New York, and she refuses. He's like, what are you going to do? Just go home and drink? And she says, I don't know what I'm doing or what I'm going to do. Yeah. And at first, it's kind of, you think maybe this was the wake-up call she needed. She pulls her shit together. She buys the house from that jerk adoptive father.
Right.
And she gives him the goddamn business beforehand, right? And then
calls him pathetic and everything.
You adopted me.
Yeah.
You know, and when he doesn't, she's like, fine, I'll just buy it. And she packs up Alma's old stuff. She buys herself new things. Yeah. And we really think she's going to get her shit together. She talks to Benny about, and he wants to go with her to Moscow. He says he misses her, which was heartbreaking. And she just doesn't respond.
Yeah. You know, I know what Cleo said about Benny. Nobody loves himself more than he does or whatever. But around now, or even when he moved in with her, I think he was like that, but I don't know. Benny cares a lot about her.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he is thinking of someone other than himself now. Not that I thought they should be together. I'm just saying I totally wanted them to.
Yeah,
no, that's fine. Yeah, I could get on board with that. I'm just saying I do think Benny did not seem as selfish as Cleo painted him out to be, or as I thought he was at sort of the beginning. So
yeah.
But yeah, he tells her to take this money from this Christian crusade and they'll pay for everything. That's what they did when I went. And, you know, and I'll be your second and let's do it.
Right. Yes. And then I forgot to go back and rewatch this. She goes out to eat, she gets Gibson, and she loses her fucking shit. What happened?
I don't know. I think you could watch it again and still not know.
She's in the restaurant and it reminds her of Alma, who had taught her, you know, Gibson is so sophisticated. And she's like, oh, I'll just have a Gibson. And then she's at the liquor store. And it's,
I mean, with bottles. I mean, this is the thing. And then she, out of control, drinking continues.
So, I mean, obviously the drinking is the clearest proximate cause. He starts drinking and then she can't stop. And but I do think it was Benny helping her and maybe even saying, I miss you, and her inability to connect with that. Because as much as she's got her stuff together and she's buying the house and getting the neighbor's kid to mow the lawn,
yeah,
she is not feeling, she's not going through anything. And just because it looks on the outside like the right things to do, she's not living. She's still numbing herself. If not with alcohol, but she's numbing herself with something else. And
right.
This is just an extension of that in the other direction, in the more self-destructive direction. It's like I said for Fleabag, perfectionism and self-destruction are just two sides of the same coin. And all of it's not meant to be feeling and not meant to be living the life that you're living and figuring it out for yourself. And so,
no, you're right. Because she didn't process what happened in Paris.
Not at
she
all.
Didn't process what the.
She probably didn't even process Alma's death.
No, you're right. You're right. Because we don't see her do that. And that Harry just comes and she just throws herself into training then right after that.
Yeah.
Then she has this spectacular fall in Paris, doesn't process that.
Right.
And then you're right. Yeah, did the external things to make it look like, all right, I've got a house, I've got to focus on that. But that's just busying yourself and also just looking as if you have your shit figured out when she clearly did not. So that one drink just.
Yep, sent her in the other. She's like, oh, we can do it. We could do it this way too. We can do it with, we can numb ourselves with lots of things.
Right. And you're right. Maybe Benny saying, I miss you was a trigger.
Yeah.
Is that?
That's what I think.
Yeah. I just think it was that she hadn't processed things. And the minute she has that one drink, it sort of starts to feel good. And the addict in her just is like, you know what? I rather than deal with any of this, I'll just go down to this black hole. Like, I know this hole. I like it there. I don't feel anything there. I'll just obliterate it. But that's when she has that moment with Harry, which I was kind of referring to earlier, where I do think that Harry really does see her in a way that no one else does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we learn that it's because his father drank too much and he recognizes the signs. He probably couldn't stop it there any more than he can stop it with her. She's got to figure this out on her own.
Yeah. And in episode 7, this was the one I listened to, the first where her mother's talking.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the opening lines are, most of the time when people tell you something is for the best, it's really for the worst. This time it's true. Okay. Oh, that is just heartbreaking. And what she's talking about is that she is going to leave her and that's going to be for the best. I mean, it's hard to think about as a mother, the idea that your child's life could be much better without you in it is just almost incomprehensible.
Impossible. Yeah, it really is.
But when you can kind of step back and look at it in this arc, in this story, I mean, you have to wonder, is it true?
I know. It is really hard, though, to separate as a mother. But I think sometimes it is.
When she arrives at Methuen, the headmistress says, you might find a better life here than you have had otherwise.
Yeah.
And you think about it, she would have never met Mr. Scheibel. She may have never learned to play chess. She would have never been adopted by Alma.
Yeah, no, I think we're seeing it through her that this was ultimately the better way.
I don't know. I still believe that chess would have found some way into her life otherwise. That this wasn't her one shot. I guess I just don't believe you ever have one shot at something. Like, and then you miss it. And then that's it. No chess for you for the whole rest of your life. This is not your fate. It's that big in her life that I don't know that she would have had no chance at it otherwise. But
I agree. And she says also, you know, we have a problem to solve. And Beth's like, what's the problem? And it's like, the problem is you.
She says, what I'm going to.
The problem is Beth.
What I'm going to do with you.
Yes. What to do with you. Yeah. Like, you're the problem, meaning I have to figure out what to do with you.
Oh, no.
But
I didn't.
Did you think she was trying to kill them both or just herself? I mean, how would you know? I mean, even if the answer is she only wanted to kill herself. Well, I mean, if you hurl your car in front of a truck and your kid's in the car, I mean, I don't know how you can be sure you're only, if you really just want to kill yourself, you know, you and definitely spare your daughter, you could find numerous other ways that don't possibly put her life in harm's way. So I didn't know if she was, you know, I mean, you could, I don't need to go through the ways that a person can kill themselves. But do you know what I mean? So then I was like, are we supposed to think she wants them both to die?
I don't. I mean,
I hope not.
It's certainly open for interpretation. But I know that sometimes you can only see what's right in front of you. And she had just come off. I mean, what if her father hadn't turned her away? Right?
True.
And maybe her mother was just like, that was it. This is all she saw. I do think she was trying to kill herself and not Beth. I have no basis for that other than my own personal projections. So
yeah, no, that's what I just was wondering. I think so too. I just, like I said, for those reasons, I was like, but I want to believe that anyway. So let's go with that.
Yeah. I don't know how much of a difference it really makes, but I just know that one person usually can't see beyond. I mean, I think we talked about this in Green Lights, Matthew McConaughey's parents fighting and fighting each other. And he broke her nose, stabbing at him in front of the kids. And then they hug and have sex. I mean, none of that's appropriate to be doing in front of kids, but they couldn't see that. They couldn't see past themselves and in the moment they were in. And I believe that's probably the same for
the state she was in.
Yeah. But when we did the first episode, I had asked, do you think that Beth's addiction, her struggles, were a result of the trauma that she had experienced or genetics? And I think the writer here really gives us the answer, which is, well, at least they're trying to push this agenda that free will is stronger than fate, because Beth took away an important lesson and a bad lesson from her mother, but this guides Beth in her whole life, that exchange between her mother and her father. She's the mother is begging the father for help. She says she feels like she's letting Beth down. She doesn't say, I can't deal with her, she's a brat, I can't handle this. She says, I feel like I'm letting her down. And she says, I need help. And he says, it's too late. And all of this as Beth is watching. What do you think, especially that age, 9 years old, she's learning very consciously, do not ask for help. Because even if you desperately need it, and it's not available, and if you can't figure it out, you will die. You will kill yourself. Yeah. You will perish. It will be over. And here it is, Beth living this same wrong lesson that was her mother's and not hers throughout this whole series.
And that she has to learn to ask for help and to take help.
Yeah.
Maybe not ask for it. I don't know that she actually doesn't ask for it. She doesn't. But she certainly receives it.
Yes.
And takes it.
Yes. Well, I think she has been all along. We'll talk about that later, because that is her big lesson. We'll talk about that in the flashback and then and then later at the episode. But Jolene comes and helps her take her first baby step out of where she is.
Yes.
And she's like, it looks like you're in a deep hole. One you dug yourself. I suggest you stop digging.
Exactly. She's awesome.
Oh, so good. She's such the breath of fresh air that this story needs, and obviously that Beth needs, and that we all wanted. I loved it.
Yeah. And she's back because Scheibel has died.
That's right.
And she goes back to the orphanage and she walks around and goes down to the basement and sees that Scheibel has been cutting out all the newspaper articles about her and following all her achievements. And then Beth takes this picture that he had tacked up and gets back in the car with Jolene and just starts sobbing. And it's a picture of little Beth with those bangs and Scheibel. And I was just like, to me in this moment, you know, she realizes that she has a lot of people in her life that love and care about her. And she's not as alone as she thought.
That was as close to a father as she was ever going to have.
Yeah.
And that losing him then would feel like a loss of a different magnitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And she also flashes back to a moment at the orphanage when she hears, choices have consequences. You are here because your parents made bad ones. You have to learn to make different ones. And that's again part of her realization and her awakening, like, okay, I do have agency here to make different choices.
Right.
And then she goes and she breaks ties with the church in a epic way, just handing them a check for all their money back. And she's stopped with the drinking, and she's talking to Jolene and she's realizing things for herself, but the outside is getting worse because now she has no money. She can't get to Moscow. She calls Benny thinking he's going to help her, as he always has. And he's like, I'm pissed. Remember, you said you would rather be alone and drunk than with me. So, yeah. And he says, don't call me anymore.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Benny.
No, I think he,
Ben, yeah. He did. And Benny says he doesn't have the money, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think he would have given it to her if he did.
Anyway. Because I mean, exactly.
She's like, you don't. It might have been a lie. Come on. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, he's like, I don't believe in you. I'm not betting on you anymore. And then Jolene, though, does. And she says she'll give her the money. And Beth calls her guardian angel. And Jolene has the best response. She's like, screw you. I'm not here to save you. I can barely save me. I'm here because you need me. That's what family does. That's what we are.
That's what we are. Those two. Oh.
I know. That was good. It was good.
Yeah, that's great.
Real impact. The right moment, the right time, the right person. All of it was just aligned.
Yeah, and she's got the money.
And then she gets off to Moscow.
Mm-hmm. One of the media things that I thought of when she got to Russia, which will come out throughout, is just how the people of Russia view chess. I mean, it is just completely part of their culture. I mean, unlike anything she's ever seen, I think, certainly in the U.S., is really staggering to her even.
That's true. And Benny had said it earlier. Look at them in Ohio. There's, he said if this was golf, there'd be reporters. And then instead of all these asleep, smelly people, and he's like, we get no respect. And you're right. There's a stark difference in Russia.
Right?
And they even comment that it's not even unusual to see a woman. There was a woman champion there. And
that's right.
And that,
but she doesn't get to play the men, right? So that she was sitting there watching. Mm-hmm. So then she starts playing some grandmasters, one of which looks like Einstein. You're right. The white-haired guy.
Yeah, I forgot his name. But to me, this is the whole sequence that sets off the ending. And this is when, frankly, I started crying. When he says, I resign with relief, and he says, you are a marvel, my dear. I may have just played the best chess player of my life. And I know, and she's so almost embarrassed and doesn't really know what to say. And he knows it. And he goes, oh, don't worry, you'll get used to it. Which I thought was just so lovely, too. But, but of course,
whatever his name is, this is someone whose books she has read. I mean, this guy is a famous grandmaster, someone she's revered. And I mean, for him to say that, you're absolutely right. I started, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. And not only did he...
I didn't start crying yet. I was getting choked up then.
Oh, I was definitely crying at that point. But, and he says, not only, she says, right, I've read all your books, I'm a fan. And he says, I studied your games and you are a marvel, my dear. We know that the big thing that happened here, it's a little bit of, again, it's more of an emotional turning point than an actual plot turning point, because the truth of the matter is the only reason she got here is because she didn't get blindsided. She had overheard him speaking with Borgov, which again harkens back to Benny saying, you know, the Russians, they all work together. No one in America works together. So he heard Borgov working with him on this attack. And if she hadn't, she wouldn't have seen this coming. She would have gotten locked in. She would have gotten pissed off, and she would have lost her ability to win. This match goes nowhere if she hadn't had that moment.
Right, right.
But it does, and she is able to get out of it. And then she's lined up to play Borgov, and she thinks of her mother. And again, we're coming back to not only the first episode, but the very beginning of this episode, which is now, you know, this episode is pretty long, so it's now like an hour ago. And the lines that they repeat are the most telling ones, I think. She says, it goes just to her mom saying, I need your help, and the father saying, it's too late. And again, Beth says, back in the car, Beth says, who was that? And she says, a mistake, a rounding error, a problem I've got to work out. And that is the moment when she's like, no, goddammit, I am the problem to be worked out. What to do with me is a problem to be worked out. And she throws out her pills.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. This is the turning point.
And she needs to stop acting like she's not a problem to work out. She is. And she's got to be working on it. Yeah. And she's not. And this is her first moment of claiming that. First step. So she starts playing Borgov. She is white this time, which gives any chess player a slight edge. And we know right off the bat from the commentator that Borgov decides to take a new approach. He does something outside of his comfort zone. I guess he's thinking that's what he needs to do to beat Beth. But we know from what Benny said in bed.
Yeah. You can't play your own game.
Exactly. Yeah.
So already he's trying to change his game for her.
And he is off balance. That is not what he should have done. So he just decides to adjourn. He gets up. He writes down his thing. And he just gets up and without a word and leaves. And it was surprising to everyone, including Beth. As she's walking away, though, that's when Towns comes.
Right. The reporters are asking questions, and then she hears his voice. I liked how they did that. I was like, oh, Towns, he's back. And they hug. They hug it out.
Yeah.
Right. But then they have their scene back in the room, which I have questions about.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just a little confused.
Well, it starts out with some very sincere apologies, real empathy.
Yeah, that's the part I have questions
about. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just a little confused, right? He says, I know you were angry with me and I'm sorry. I should have told you the whole story. She says, no, I'm sorry. I should have let you. And he says, I was a little confused. You really are something. But what I really wanted for us was to be friends. I mean, what was the whole story he wanted to tell that she's saying I should have let you, meaning whatever was going on with him and that guy? Or what are we apologizing for? Other than, yes, it was a weird incident, both sides.
I think he's saying, I did not mean to mislead you. I did want you in the room. I did. Like when I was looking up at you, those big eyes and touching your hair. And
I meant all that.
Yeah, but it was only because you're just so exceptional. The truth of the matter is I am gay. I am not interested. That was never going to happen. But I got caught up in the moment. And that's why she rightly apologizes. She didn't let him explain any of that.
I mean, so no one was going to say the obvious that he was that he was gay. We're just supposed to assume that she understands that that's what the confusion was. And
no, the confusion was that he felt something when he looked up at her and was taking her picture, but it wasn't real. He was never going to love her and be with her. He was
right because he's
gay.
Gay. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I think I read somewhere that at this time, which was 1967, I think, or whatever, it was still illegal. I don't know my history, and that's not, which is why they're not overtly discussing it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which does make sense. I mean, again, I didn't fact check that. I don't know, but it seems like it's possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so I liked the moment when he said, you kind of broke my heart, and she was, I have a way of doing that. I like that line.
Meanwhile, then, it was her who was really the one suffering, and he wasn't suffering at all.
Then she tells him that she thinks she needs the pills and alcohol to win.
Yeah. She says, I need my mind cloudy. I can't visualize the games without them. And she concludes the conversation with, I just really need them right now. Or I thought I did. And now that he's there, she's sort of giving him a wink. Like, now that you're here, maybe I don't, but I still kind of think I do. Because this isn't going
to
cut it.
Like, I poured them out, but I also called downstairs to see where I could get more. So, I mean, you know, she's being honest. Like,
but when he challenges her and says, you've been doing well without them, she was like, but I can't do this next part, is what she's saying. Mm-hmm. I can't do this next part without them. But, you know, but she's willing to go to sleep. And then the next morning, Towns wakes her up with a cup of coffee and a phone call. Oh, my God. I just couldn't. I can't even talk about it.
All her people on the line. Benny and Harry and all her friends. The twins, I don't even know their names, who early on were like, why are these guys everywhere? Well, they're back.
Yeah, the Grandmaster, the other guy she beat in New York, they're all there.
To go through every possible permutation and variation of the next moves that Borgov could make and then how she should respond.
Yeah. But why I was crying? Well, so why were you crying?
Okay. So first, I had a lot of thoughts about this scene at first. I mean, first I was like, oh boy, like, is this where, honestly, I thought, is this where it comes through that a man wrote this? I was thinking first. Oh, sure. She needs a bunch of men to help her win this match. Yeah, they have to tell her what to do. She had to get all the men back to do it. Mm. But then I thought, secondly, I'm like, oh, is this like a little cheesy? Like, oh, look, the gang's all back together. But that it's just that I was just so emotional because I'm like, it's just okay to need people and to find comfort or support from people who are genuinely rooting for you and who are trying to help you. And especially for Beth, who'd been taught, you know, in all these flashbacks we learned from her mother, to go it alone, or, you know, to don't ask for help and all this. And because you, when you need it, you won't get it, like you said before. And she gets it here and she receives it. And when you see her face on the phone, she's so moved by this. And then I just saw it for me is what it was just them offering her genuine support and help. And then I that's when the bawling started.
Oh yeah. I mean, the bawling started for me as soon as he handed the phone over and Benny was on the other side. I agree with all of those things, but for me, the change was so visceral because she always knew she needed help. That's what she thought she was getting from the pills, was help, but also relief. Relief from having to do every single part. The thinking, the planning, the executing, the feeling, the dealing, the consequences, all of it. She had to do all of it herself. And the pills and the booze, they gave her relief. But this is a moment where she understands there's another way. And that was just what, just eviscerated me. That realization that you can get relief from someone else.
And you're not a person that likes to ask for help.
Me?
No. Right.
No. But nor did she, and nor does she.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But just another way of framing it, because it is framed with help. But for me, the feeling, I guess the outward presentation is asking for help. The inward feeling and what I felt for her is the relief. And that is something she was getting all along. And I've done this too with alcohol and different ways that you can get that relief. And she was getting it all along because you do need it. But this is a healthier, better way of getting it. And that really, that crushed me.
And that you don't have to do this alone.
Yeah. Yeah, but
that's a relief, though. I guess, to me. Relief.
Yeah, but does doing it alone, is it the same with the pills?
Yeah, but one is
right. Oh yes, one healthier. Is extremely, yes,
yeah, healthier.
I'm not disagreeing. It's just a really fine point on something that we've talked about lots, but I've never seen in the same way, and probably why I still continue to struggle to this day. I don't really want help. What I want is relief. And there are many ways to get it, some healthier, some not healthier.
Right. And I guess I'd just say help. When you get help, it gives you relief.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
When it's good, when it's helpful, you know what I mean? Like people helping you in ways that aren't helpful doesn't give you relief.
I guess, and now we're really just getting into me being on the couch. I don't know if that's true. No. There's been plenty of times when I have reached out to someone. No, plenty is the wrong word. There have been times, maybe one or two, when I've reached out and the person was actually not at all helpful and still gave me relief. And there have also been times when I've reached out and gotten help that has been helpful and isn't a relief.
I could see that. It's a feeling.
It's a razor thin difference, but it is one that internally feels so different.
And you can see it on her face here that it is the kind you're describing.
Oh, I love when she got choked up when she heard Harry's voice.
Harry, exactly. Oh. And she's so overcome. You're right, with emotion in that moment. And I love that scene.
Too much. I just bawled the whole, and there was no way I could stop after that. I was just, it had set off something in me and I just cried through the rest. But since we're not watching it, we're just talking about it, we can move on. So honestly, though, I would have been perfectly fine with that being the end of the show. If that was the end of the whole thing, I would have been very happy. To me, it was very, I'll save that.
Yeah, that's a huge part for yes. me. I agree with you. That was so satisfying.
We'll talk about it a little more at the end because I do want to go through kind of the beats first. But I'm going to come to how I think the best thing that could ever happen is a woman written by a man in this way. But I'm not throwing out the whole podcast. Don't worry. But we'll get to that. We'll get to it. Okay, so then it's the next day and she's back to the big game with Borgov. And she already knows they've gone through so many variations. She feels really prepared and ready. And
they're doing a bunch of moves right. that seem fine. But then at some point he moves the pawn and Towns whispers.
Shit.
Like, shit, that's not what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Or yeah.
And this is the point where she would have gotten all screwed up. She would have gotten locked mm-hmm. in and she would have thrown the game, right? She would have not been able to recover, but yep. instead she doesn't. And she looks to the ceiling. And this time, this was the most beautiful moment for me when she's looking at that mm-hmm. gorgeous ceiling and she's doing the chess like she did on the ceiling in her mind. Her eyes, the light on her, yeah. it's so stunning.
Oh my gosh. And like we said, I've loved those giant mm-hmm. chess pieces moving. But in this moment, you're right. It is, you're right there with her. And I'm like, of course, I really was again at the edge of my seat. I'm like, you gotta find a way inside yourself, Beth.
Yes,
see the moves. See the moves. Yes.
And she does.
And of course, everyone else is looking up at the ceiling, by the right. way, right? Like Borgov's like, what the fuck's up there? And like the commentator, like the whole audience is like, what is she looking mm-hmm. at?
Right? And she recovers. And that alone is enough yeah. to throw Borgov. And he offers her a draw. And we have a moment while she thinks about it. And the announcer says, Borgov never offers a draw. Mm-hmm. This is pretty amazing. She could be co-world champion. This is a big deal. She should definitely take it. And then he says, but the one thing we know about Elizabeth Harmon is she loves to win.
To win. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I got scared. You're saying yes, but I did not feel yes.
No, I'm saying yes because I love that. I mean, plus it's a TV show. I figured she would go for it.
Oh.
You can't take a draw.
Right.
No.
Right. But I got scared. I thought that meant she was going to lose because she.
Oh,
she's too
okay. Far. No, see, I thought that meant she was going to win.
No,
but you're right. It could have easily been, yeah, that she's blinded by, you know, her desire to win.
We've seen it with Benny. She gets blindsided and she doesn't. This is what you talked about with Alma. You were too busy trying to win. And she says,
yeah,
you don't know anything about chess. I know about losing and now you do too.
I agree. I felt confident by this point. I felt like Beth had changed, that she, I don't know. I didn't have the same reaction, but you're right. Based on what we've seen about
in
her,
this
that
show.
Was a totally yeah. reasonable. Yeah, 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 yeah. Totally reasonable reaction. But I also, you know, like I said, I compared these to some of the great sports movies. I'm like, yeah, you know how this is going to go. I mean,
yeah. Well,
she's going to win.
See, I also think she could have taken, I don't know that the right ending isn't taking the draw because she would have learned a different lesson. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Under my sports movie theory, though, the win, you got to come away with the win.
Yeah. Yeah. I got, okay. Yeah. But this was such a deep character movie. I didn't, or
yeah.
show. I didn't think of it just as like as simple as
no,
those beats,
not,
right?
But. Yeah, yeah, but I just, I don't know. Yeah. I had no fear right. of her losing.
But you obviously then felt something about the win. Yes, you were like, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Oh my God. She's just accomplished the very thing. She wants to win. Yeah. She wants to be the best. And this is what she's been working for and studying. And I mean, yeah, I was so pumped by the win.
But then also you didn't think back to that conversation with the little boy, which is like, well, what are you going to do after that? You're going to win. And then what?
Well, then you'll figure. Yeah, no. Well, that's fine. Of course, you always have to figure out what you're going to do after. You'd have to figure that out even if you got a draw, right? I mean.
No. Well, then she would keep the goal of wanting to be winner. And that would be the next.
Yes. No, I didn't worry about that. I was too busy pumping my fist.
All right.
And celebrating.
Yeah. And then after that,
when she's back in the car with the security guy. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, he's going through. You're going to go back to Washington and you'll play chess against the president. And here are your talking points for a party in Georgetown after, you know, beating the Soviets is a big deal. We'll want you to say this or that. And it sort of reminded me of the Christian crusade group, she's not real big on people telling her what to do or what to say. Yeah. Like the minute you hand her talking points, you should just know it's all over.
Yeah. A friend of mine said she liked that she defied convention all the time. But I think she's never learned it. It's the distinction like I made in Untamed, the difference between becoming untamed and having been raised feral. And that's, by the way, what I said about myself. So I'm not. Right. But I do think she's got that same thing going on. There's a lot less to unlearn when you haven't learned what you're quote unquote supposed to do.
Oh, so that's a good point, because I would have said what your friend said, that I do think she defies convention or doesn't do what other people tell her to do because that's what's expected. Right. But you're saying, if you don't know what's expected because you never really learned the rules, you don't think you're breaking
right.
them.
Or you don't care either way. You just do what you do. And to me, this is what the ending represented. She was just doing what she wants to do. She follows what she loves, and she loves chess.
Yeah, and when she goes, asks, you know, the car to pull over, and she goes walking through and she sees all the old men playing chess, and you know, they obviously realize who she is and shaking her hand and everything. And when she sits down with the old man and she says, "Let's play," and that's the last line, and she looks so happy. But I think she's found the joy in chess again, and it's time for her to be able to celebrate her accomplishments. I think that it's her victory lap there at the end.
I don't know. So, again, to me, it felt like a beginning again. It wasn't a celebration of what happened. It was a going back to what really matters. And she's like, I'm just going to do what I love. And what I love is to play chess. And that's against Borgov, or that's against these guys in the park. It just is it is who I am. And this was one of those moments where I thought she hasn't changed at all. And that was a good thing. This is a part of her I didn't want to see change and didn't change. And I was very happy about that. I love that this show was so incredibly drawn and written that you could debate all of this. And to me, it's not a right or wrong. To me, it's like you bring to it what you bring to it. And they don't feel contradictory to me. They just feel like different points of view. And that is why I really was so impressed with this ending. I said it all along, the way this show always set up your expectations to be exactly what you expect. They know what your expectations are going to be. They're not going to thwart the expectation from the start, but they are going to subvert them at the point you think is going to come through the way you expected. And you know the person I was thinking of the most at the end. Do you know?
No.
Britt Marling.
Oh, I did not think of that.
This is the hero's journey with a very feminine, and again, we're not talking about girl or gender. We're talking about the feminine, and this idea in her New York Times piece, "I don't want to be a strong female lead," because they were still always following the hero's quest, and the hero's quest in and of itself is a masculine idea, because a feminine way to approach a problem or an obstacle is to band together and let community overcome and let brainstorming and working together. And that's exactly what happened. Yes. And yet we got our hero's journey for the people who would have been too upset at it not being that way. But if you really look deeper, and if that's what you wanted to see, you see this as this is not her journey. This is everyone's journey. Everyone on that phone, Jolene's because she gave her the money, Scheibel's for teaching her. This is a real
group effort in
the
a way.
The ending doesn't happen without all of those people. Right. And I thought that was just a beautiful combination of that masculine and feminine.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you're right. The ideas of community and working together was a very feminine notion.
I could not help but think of the OA and our conversation that we did in a quick cap a long time ago, and then our conversation with Chloe Benjamin, and how the group has to overcome instead of one person being the hero.
Yes, yeah. But I do love, though, that in that one moment when she looks up at the ceiling, it is on her in that moment to see the move. Yeah. Meaning, I do like
it. Yeah, it's got both. It's the masculine journey and the feminine journey.
I love that there was the combination. You're absolutely right. And so we think that the male has clearly drawn us a complex, complicated female protagonist. Huh?
Well, I don't know.
He has.
Yes. But I feel like we found that before. I am really marveling at the true, I'm not even talking about gender, the man who wrote the woman, Beth Harmon. I'm talking about the yoking of the masculine and the feminine. And that was just next level.
Yeah. This is just fantastic.
No. I loved this so much. I immediately bought the book. I cannot wait to see the differences.
Yeah. I've heard it's very true to form, but yeah, I guess we'll find out. I'm
very excited for that. And I can't believe how long ago it was written. I wonder if that would matter to me a lot. The ending, the guy's coming back and helping her. If that's in there, that would be a big deal because like I said, that feels like a very, very progressive, almost beyond where anyone else in 2020 actually is. I mean, I think Britt Marling's too ahead of her time. I do. This would be reflective of that, the masculine and the feminine way of approaching the end. Yes.
Maybe he was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
I read an interview with the actress, Anna Taylor-Joy, and she said about the ending. They asked her about that last scene. First of all, a lot of people asked whether Beth had defected to the USSR. That's apparently like a out in the blogosphere or the internet. Like that's a big, did you ever think that? I didn't.
Sure. I think it was unclear. I think that, like you said, they take chess so much more seriously there. What was she going to go back to? I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
That is what people are saying.
It wouldn't have surprised me. I didn't care either way. So I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it.
It wasn't a big deal for you. But they asked her that and the actress just laughed. But she said, that moment for me, man, I cannot tell you how connected I was to this character. She said, at the end of every one of those takes, I would just start crying. See, it's apparently happens to everyone. We want to let you know we've launched a Patreon page where supporters can receive perks like bonus episodes and exclusive content.
Because Pop Fiction Women is our passion project, a place where we give women space to show up and offer in-depth analysis in the ways we're used to hearing about male creators and their characters.
We delve into creativity and psychology with a dash of astrology, and we have so much fun doing it. Just two friends breaking down books, movies, and shows like Normal People, Fleabag, and I May Destroy You.
Every single aspect of this podcast we do ourselves, from the preparation to the recording, from the editing to the social media promotion. So we're adding a Patreon platform because we want to keep making the show you love and hopefully expand it even further.
So please consider becoming one of our most complicated fans and contributing on Patreon.
To learn more, go to patreon.com/popfictionwomen.
This has been Pop Fiction Women with Corinne and Kate.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell the complicated women in your life.
And the men who love them.
Yes, tell them to listen. And then to follow on Spotify or review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And of course, share on social media.
Tag us with your favorite books, TV shows and movies starring complicated women on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Fiction Women or on Twitter at Pop_Women.
For more coverage of the women you love or to find out if you qualify as a complicated woman, go to popfictionwomen.com.
And keep it complicated.